Yo, can you hear me?
Well, yes, we can.
All right.
Welcome to the MCS Real Sports Podcast. We are entering episode number 17. And as many of you guys may have heard, this is our very own special guest from Above the Rim, his very own podcast. This is Nick Andre.
What's going on, y'all? Happy to be a part of the show.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. We're right now waiting for my co-host Caleb to join on in a little bit. And Nick Andre also is a part of the Unwrapped Sports Network, just like Caleb and I. Welcome, Caleb, for joining in. And
Yes, sir.
how we doing? How we doing?
Hey, we're good on this side. We're good on this side, man.
All right, perfect. I was just welcoming our very special guest, Nick Andre. He has his very own podcast, Above the Rim. So for those of you guys who watch our podcast, make sure to check out Nick Andre's as well. Very, very into basketball. He's got a very good podcast of his own. And for today's episode that we're going to be discussing is we're going to be discussing pretty much the whole NBA playoffs. You know, a lot has gone on in the NBA playoffs in general. We got the Miami Heat sweeping the Indiana Pacers, moving on to the second round to await the winner of the Milwaukee Bucks Orlando Magic series. We also got the Boston Celtics sweeping the Philadelphia 76ers, which was 4-0. And then we're just going to discuss the rest of the series. You know, we got the Jazz up 3-1 over the Nuggets, Lakers up 3-1 over the Blazers, and we got some very good 2-2 series between the Clippers, Mavericks, and the Thunder Rockets. I'm gonna first start off with this series that just went down. As many of you guys know, the Boston Celtics swept the Philadelphia 76ers in the playoffs, and as a result, Brett Brown, after 7 years with the Philadelphia 76ers, gets fired. I'm going to start off with the special guest, Nick Andre. If you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you fire Brett Brown. Who do you believe is going to be the next replacement?
Man, that's tough for me. I just think that whoever they get next, they're going to have to really understand how to use both Embiid and Simmons. You know what I'm saying? Because I mean, I think both of them, they get along really well, but I just think that Brett Brown didn't put them in the best positions. But as far as maybe a coach, there's so many. Mark Jackson is available. There's other few coaches that I can't think of right now, but whoever they pick as their next head coach, they're going to have a championship mentality, somebody who's willing to win, somebody who's willing to like really put his guys in the best situation to win. And just, you know, ho just kind of get them over the hump in the East, because I mean, Philly has been really anticipated to come out of the East the past few years, but you know, obviously, they've fallen short every single time. So they really just need somebody that's just going to really help them get over the hump in the East, to me.
That definitely a good options there. I'm gonna then say that same question to you, Caleb. If you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you just fired Brett Brown. Who do you believe will be the best replacement for Brett Brown? Okay, we lost Caleb real quick. We'll wait for him to come back. I'm gonna give my take. I feel like, in my opinion, it's gonna be. I feel like Tyronn Lue could be a good option.
Yes.
The reason why I'm going with Tyronn Lue is just because he's won where he's coached. Obviously, you know, he was a part of Cleveland with LeBron James, and LeBron really loved the guy. You know, that's why they pretty much have him as the next, hopefully the next coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, a lot of people actually thought Tyronn Lue was going to be the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, just because LeBron James really loved him in Cleveland. You know, obviously the Lakers head coach now is Frank Vogel, going with his assistant Jason Kidd. But I feel like Tyronn Lue is going to be the perfect hiring for Philadelphia if they decide to go that route. I'm going to go to you, Caleb. If you're the Philadelphia 76ers, who do you believe should be the next head coach?
Well, that's a big question. You know, it has to start off with the front office. They have to make a decision if they want to keep Ben and Joel together. I think they could run it back like 2 more years. That's all I would give it. They're a good amount of options right now. You got Mark Jackson, like Nick mentioned. You got you even got Jason Kidd. It just really all depends. I would just start off with dressing. I don't know if they could coexist. I mean, to me, it's just hard to believe. But if I was either team, I mean, if I was that team, I would pick either coach, either Mark Jackson or Ty Lue, maybe even Jason Kidd. But I think they need to address if they want to keep Ben and Joel together first. That's the first concern. That should be their first concern, because I'm not convinced that they could get it done. I'm really not.
Mm-hmm. You definitely brought up a good point there, which kind of parlays into kind of the next question. You really brought up a good point, Caleb, and I'm gonna kind of go to you for this one. If you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you have to pick one player. Embiid or Simmons, who are you keeping and who are you trading?
Man, question. To me, I'm going to keep him. I need a guard who can shoot, multiple guards who can shoot. Ben is a great player. I don't know if he can lead a team. He's not healthy. You can't depend on him. I think Philly was in a great position last year when they had Jimmy Butler, J.J. Redick, Tobias Harris. I fucked that off. They should have kept that together. But I think I would go around Embiid. I think they have enough pieces to go around Embiid, go get a guard, and pair him with Embiid and see what they could do. But Ben Simmons, he throws me off right there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I'm gonna come at you with the same question, Nick. If you had to keep one and trade one between Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, who you going with?
You see, I honestly was with Caleb like probably 6 months ago. I probably would have picked Embiid over Simmons, but I might have to pick Ben just because I really don't like what I've seen. I really don't like what I've really seen from Joel Embiid over this past season. Like, he's been out of shape. He doesn't look engaged into the offense. He doesn't look like, you know, he's really as focused as he needs to be. And in all honesty, I've been on point saying that when Joel Embiid is like engaged and assertive, he's one of the best bigs in the game, period. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like there's nobody in the NBA that can stop him when he's on his game. But
facts.
But the thing is, I need him to be on his game in the most pivotal moments. Like, you know what I mean? Like, in this series showed, like, you know, Joel is clearly out of shape. He clearly gave up throughout, I think, like, the last, like, probably 6-7 minutes of the fourth quarter game four, just because, I mean, he pretty much knew that they were getting swept. And when I look back at the season, there was a time where Joel was hurt and he was out for a while and Ben Simmons was in control. And I feel like if Philadelphia can, like, get some shooters around Ben Simmons, they could be a really successful team. Ben Simmons is like what has one of the best IQs and one of the best visions in the NBA today. And plus he's freakishly athletic. So it's like, yeah, he can't really shoot, but eventually he can develop a jump shot. And here's the thing: when he had J.J. Redick and Jimmy Butler and a couple other guys last year, the Sixers were successful just because Ben Simmons had those key shooters around him. So I think that's really what it takes. So if I had to like choose between one or the other, I would pick Ben Simmons just because of that. Just because whenever Joel Embiid was hurt and Ben Simmons was playing, they were actually pretty successful. It doesn't seem like the Sixers can play without Ben Simmons being that point forward for them, spreading the floor and really like kicking it out to guys. So if I had to choose one or the other, it would have to be Ben Simmons.
Yeah, I'm agree with you as well, Nick. You made some really good points there. I feel like I keep Simmons and I trade Joel Embiid. And I'll be honest, I feel like Joel Embiid has more trade value. I feel like you can get a lot more for Joel Embiid than you can with Ben Simmons. And I mean, we kind of look at it, it's kind of a new era in the NBA. It's very rare where you see like NBA teams kind of franchise star like their centers. You know, in like the 90s and early 2000s, you know, the main franchise stars like was the centers, you know, like the Hakeem Olajuwons, like a prime Shaquille O'Neal, like David Robinson. You know, those centers were like the key guys that a lot of franchises really needed because of the bully ball that they played back in the day. But now it kind of seems like in this new era where, you know, there it's pretty much you got to have a good point guard with some good shooters around him. You know, obviously we know Ben Simmons, he's kind of struggling shooting a little bit, but if you could surround him with shooters, I mean, look at what Milwaukee has done with Giannis. I mean, we look at Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's known for driving the ball down, not really known for his shooting, but they've been able to pair great shooters around him, you know, with Chris Middleton, Eric Bledsoe, Dante DiVincenzo, even Pat Connaughton, and even Brooke Lopez starting to get a jump shot. You know, they've surrounded Giannis perfectly. I feel like if I'm Philadelphia and I want to try to get back to a championship contending team, I feel like you trade Embiid and pair him up with shooters, kind of like they had a couple years ago. I remember a couple years ago, Philadelphia had a lot of shooters. They had like Ersan Ilyasova, Marco Bellinelli, J.J. Redick. They had sharp shooters, and now it seems like they don't really have any. So it's going to be interesting to see what Philadelphia does. Obviously, they fired Brett Brown. You know, we'll see who they hire eventually. And then now it's kind of wait and see what Elton Brand and the front office will do with the 76ers. Will they keep the team and run it back, or will they trade one of their top pieces? Which then
– And here's – if you don't mind me interrupting you, based off you guys' answers, this is my question to both of you guys. What do you think Philly could get for Joel Embiid right now?
Ooh, I'm going to go with the special guest first.
Okay. I think I remember a while back I saw this on Twitter. They were saying trade Joel Embiid for Bam Adebayo. Bam Adebayo has emerged as well. He's a candidate for most improved. I don't know. But like, here's my thing. Like, my thing is like for Philly, like they don't like. And I'm kind of coming off what Matt was talking about earlier. Like, you don't need like a solid like a superstar big man on your team to be successful. Like, you know what I'm saying? You look at Milwaukee, they have Brook Lopez. Look at how successful they've been. You look at Boston, they have Daniel Tice and a few other guys. Canter. Yeah, and it's Canter. You know, you look at how successful they are. Even Memphis, when they had Jonas Valanciunas, who has elevated his game over the past few years. So it's kind of like, I mean, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, Ben Simmons has easily proven that, you know, he can be a successful player when he has those key guys around him that can stay ready and knock down shots. You know what I mean? So I can kind of look at that. I'm not saying, like, get rid of one or the other, because I feel like both Ben and Joel fit perfectly together. I just think that they need the right coach that can put them in those positions. So, I'm kind of going off what you say, Caleb. I'll say give it another 2 years maybe and see what they can do in the Eastern Conference, but if it doesn't work within the next few years, I don't know what Philly can do. They're going to have to get rid of one or the other.
You made some good points, Nick. Caleb, coming off your question, if I'm the Philadelphia 76ers, I'm trading Joel Embiid. I got to get at least a first-round pick and another star player. Like if I'm – like, he would be an interesting team. I don't believe it will happen. If I'm this team, I wouldn't do it. But if I were Philadelphia 76ers, I'd see what I can get for Bradley Beal. I mean, if you want a perfect shooter to pair up with Ben Simmons, Bradley Beal is going to be that perfect guy. And if I'm Philadelphia, maybe ask the Wizards, hey, give me a first-round pick and Bradley Beal, and you might have yourself a deal. Do I think it'll happen? No. But if I'm Philadelphia, the main thing that I'm just looking for is at least a first-round pick and some shooters.
Yeah, they need shooters. They need shooters. My thing with them in a trade is just like, you know, they have Bias, J.J. Redick. I mean, they're not going to be able to unload Embiid for that many guys. I mean, if you want to go – Embiid, that's gonna have to be like almost a straight up trade. So, it's just they're in a shaky position. I mean, not bad takes. You guys, I totally agree with you guys as well. I mean, They're in an unfortunate position right now.
Definitely in an unfortunate position. Let's move on to another team that's been eliminated. The Indiana Pacers. We look at what the Indiana Pacers did during the regular season. It was fantastic. Domantas Sabonis turned into an all-star. Victor Oladipo kind of came back, showed some flashes. Then the pandemic hit, went into the bubble. Domantas Sabonis wasn't in the bubble. But we saw some players step up that we never really seen step up before. A big one that a lot of people saw step up big was TJ Warren. TJ Warren obviously started off the bubble fantastic. And it was a great first-round series, obviously, between the Heat and the Pacers. Before the pandemic thing happened, you know, there was a Twitter beef. You know, there was a beef between Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren. You know, Jimmy Butler basically owning TJ Warren, basically blowing kisses at him, calling him fucking trash and soft, which were all facts at the time. But kind of like in The Last Dance, when MJ said he took it personal, TJ Warren took it personal and decided to play like a bubble MVP. You know, sadly, it did not work his way, as the Miami Heat just full on obliterated Indiana. They swept them in four games. I mean, I expected Miami to win that series, but not the way that they did it. I thought it would be one of the good series. I thought it could be a series that could go six or seven games, but the way how Miami made such quick work of Indiana was honestly impressive to me. And I'm going to kind of go to you, Nick, with this question. If you're the Indiana Pacers, obviously you didn't have Domantas Sabonis in the bubble, but the way how you got swept – Should you consider possibly firing Nate McMillan, or do you just run it back with the same team like last year?
I think you run it back, man. I mean, Indiana was like a clear surprise out of every team in the NBA. I think Indiana was like a big surprise, especially without Oladipo for like the majority of the year, and they still managed to catch it a four seed in the East. It's unfortunate. I mean, I had Miami winning at seven. I most definitely did not see them sweeping Indiana. But you also got to think about me. Like you said, Sabonis was injured. He had an all-star year. Oladipo showed flashes, but you could easily still tell that, you know, he was still trying to get into a groove of things throughout the series. TJ Warren, he played pretty solid, but he didn't play up to the level that he was playing at when the bubble first started. Miles Turner's played okay to me, but I mean, I think you should run it back, man. I think a healthy Indiana team can really make some damage. I mean, I think a few years back they played Boston and they got swept by Boston as well. They probably could have beat Boston, not beat Boston, but probably could have took it like six, seven games if Victor Oladipo was healthy. So I think this team is solid with Nate McMillan. I think he's a solid coach, but I think they just got to get healthy and, you know, just probably add a few more pieces in, possibly look at the free agency this year in the offseason, and then just kind of see where you can go from there.
Definitely an interesting take there, Nick. I'm going to come back with that same question for you, Caleb. If you're the Indiana Pacers, do you run it back or do you change some things?
You know what? Like I said, it's safe to run it back. I think it's safe to run it back with them. I think they should move a couple pieces around, see what they could get for a couple of guys, just shake it up a little bit. I mean, with the team that they have, they're almost a piece away. I mean, they are a piece away, but, you know, it's like, who can you really trade to get a star guy? I mean, we just got done talking about Philly and Embiid, and, you know, that wouldn't be a bad two places trade. You know, you could get Victor Oladipo and maybe Miles Turner for Embiid, somebody nice, maybe get Embiid down there. But I think they should try to shake it up, see what they could get, you know, test the market. If not, play it safe, run it back, get a couple guys from free agency, make their roster a lot deeper, try to compare their roster and line up their roster to like Toronto. They're a similar team. I mean, the Pacers are like a Toronto. They just need one more star or one more young guy that's like really good, like Pascal Siakam. So I think they're either a piece away if they want. I think they should try to be a daring team, shake some things up, maybe get a good guy off the market. Yeah, that's my take. They could go either way.
Yeah, I'm also agree with what Nick said. I feel like the Indiana Pacers should run it back, and a lot of people also forget they also had Jeremy Lamb. You know, Jeremy Lamb, he was a good bench piece for them. Obviously, you know, he had the tough injury where I believe he tore his ACL. You know, lost him for the season. But I feel like if Indiana could run the team back and if they can stay healthy, I feel like they could be a dark horse. Kind of like what Miami is this year. I feel like Indiana could be that dark horse team next year if they run it back. If Oladipo comes back and plays like an all-star like he was 2 years ago, if Domantas Sabonis still plays like an all-star, they bring back TJ Warren. If he keeps on doing great, then Indiana is a team where you know they have good pieces. They just have to stay healthy and deliver. And yeah, that's pretty much it right there. And I just don't think
they have that guy that could get them 30 a night. And in this league, you really need that.
You don't think Oladipo can do that next year once he's like fully healthy?
I think he can. I truly.
You think he can get them 30 a night?
I truly believe possibly. He can. I feel like I feel like he could bring it up another level. And I kind of love how Nick said Victor Oladipo wasn't 100%. He didn't really look 100%. Like when his first year in Indiana, where he pretty much turned into an all-star and kind of looked like the Pacers won that trade against the Thunder. Remember, they traded Paul George, and in return, they gave up Oladipo and Sabonis. They both made immediate impacts their first year. Oladipo turned into an all-star. I feel like when he's fully healthy, I feel like he could turn into that all-star player. And, you know, with Domantas Sabonis keep on getting better, and if TJ Warren can potentially keep on playing good like he did in the bubble. Now, I wouldn't say the first games of the bubble, like where he dropped like 50-plus points, but if he could get almost 20 points a game, then that's a solid right there. And, yeah, honestly, Indiana is going to be one of those teams where they could just be – they could be a thorn. They could be a thorn on someone's side, you know. They could potentially compete for a third seed. And I'll never forget Oladipo's first year with Indiana. Either first or second year at Indiana – they were the third seed in the Eastern Conference. Then Oladipo gets hurt, fall to the fifth seed. Obviously, they get swept by the Boston Celtics. But let's not forget, they were the third seed with the healthy Oladipo. And before, Domantas Sabonis was an all-star. So if Oladipo's healthy and if Sabonis can keep up his all-star pace, watch out for Indiana.
Yeah, Indiana's definitely going to be a team to, like, look out for. I think it'll be interesting next year to really see, like, that dynamic of, like, a big three with Oladipo, Sabonis, and TJ Warren. If TJ Warren continues to play at the level that he's been playing. What do y'all think about that?
Yeah, that's the key guy, really. That's why I really don't think Oladipo could succeed as much as you guys think he can. I'm not saying he can't score 30. He definitely has the talent to do that night in and night out. I just think he doesn't have the pieces to, you know, really get the defense to key in on other players. But if TJ Warren can do, I mean, half of what he did in the bubble when he was having those 50, 40-point games, if he could average maybe 20 to 25 points and you still got a healthy Sabonis and a Victor Oladipo, the Pacers are a lot more dangerous. But if TJ Warren goes back down to that 15 points, 14 points per game, I just think they're going to be that same mediocre team that's not going to get there, you know?
You definitely brought up a good question, Nick. And I feel like if we can see, like, if Oladipo still turns into an all-star, if Domantas Sabonis keeps playing good, and if TJ Warren plays good, then I feel like they could be a legitimate threat to Milwaukee or Toronto if the players keep on progressing well. Like if TJ Warren could average almost 20 a night, if Victor Oladipo comes back an all-star, if Domantas Sabonis continues his all-star pace, that's a big three right there that I think could be scary in the Eastern Conference. I mean, we look at Milwaukee, it's pretty much Giannis. It's pretty much two guys in Milwaukee. It's Giannis and Chris Middleton. Then it's kind of the rest of the players. we look at Toronto, it's pretty much a mix of everybody. It's Pascal Siakam and then somebody else, like a Fred VanVleet, Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, or even like Serge Ibaka. It's anybody else. The same thing with Boston. With Boston, it's Tatum, it's Brown, it's Smart, it's Hayward. There really isn't like a main guy there. In Indiana, there could potentially be three main pieces if they progress well.
Right.
Thanks.
Only if they progress well. Let's move. Oh, go ahead.
My bad. Before we move on, I got one more question towards you. I came up with a trade scenario. I wanted to see if you guys think this is possible.
Right,
we go TJ Warren, Miles Turner, 2 first round picks to Philly for Embiid. Is that going through? Is that a solid trade?
If I'm Philadelphia, I'm taking that.
Okay.
If I'm Philadelphia, I am. That's a lot of value. That's TJ Warren. That's Miles Turner, your starting center, and you get 2 first round picks for a guy.
I mean, and you probably got to go Embiid and maybe somebody off the bench and maybe like a second back, but you know, just that base.
I personally think it'll be good for Philly, but I need Joel to really, like, if that were to happen, I need Joel to really take that extra step. You know what I'm saying? Like, Joel's got to get in shape. Joel's got to really be engaged playing alongside Vic and Sabonis. Like, I don't think he needs to go in there and kind of fuck everything up. You know what I'm saying? Like, fuck up, like, the whole dynamic that they kind of built. So I think it's a win for Philly just because, I mean, like we've been talking about, I mean, you put some great scores around Ben Simmons, and I mean that's honestly like success to me. But I think as far as like if that were to happen, I'm not saying Joel Embiid can't succeed in Indiana, but I think that playing alongside like these guys, I think that he'll have to take it up an extra step, especially like, you know, for an emerging Indiana team like this who has been like slowly coming up in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, most definitely. I just think, you know, pairing Embiid with a guard who could attack downhill and it's a playmaking guard would be a lot different, you know, and a little bit more successful. But I definitely agree with you. He has to take it up another level with his consistency for sure.
What about you, Caleb? You threw out the awesome trade offer. If you're Philadelphia, would you actually take that trade?
I would. That's like getting that good value back. You're not gonna run across something like that where you get, you know, a guy who could score and a guy who could play defense that's a good big. But, yeah, I definitely would. They're getting more value. It's better than a straight-up offer, like I said earlier, with Embiid and Bradley Beal. I would definitely take that.
Definitely good takes there. Let's move on to another team that got swept, the Toronto Raptors, sweeping the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, a sweep that everybody pretty much expected. A lot of the Brooklyn Nets players opted out before the bubble. They didn't have KD or Kyrie. This was pretty much a season for the Nets where, obviously, you know, before the season starts, you get KD and Kyrie, which is a huge win. Pretty much KD is out the first year. It's pretty much see what Kyrie Irving does. They kind of had a bit of a sluggish start. You know, then the season gets shut down a little bit. A lot of players opted out, and it was kind of one of those situations where it was can Brooklyn win a playoff game? They weren't able to do that. Obviously, they moved on from Kenny Atkinson partway through the season, and they're still going to be looking for a head coach. And you know, next season, obviously, with them bringing back KD and Kyrie. We look at the Brooklyn Nets, obviously, they didn't really do well in the playoffs, but who really expect them to do good? They were pretty much a team kind of waiting for next season. And I'm going to go to the special guest, Nick, on this one. Do you believe the Brooklyn Nets have a legit chance to win a championship next season with a healthy Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving?
Hell yeah. Like, people don't understand. Like, I think like we've been looking so much at the East this year. I think we've overlooked how Brooklyn is going to be next year when they have a healthy Kyrie and a healthy Kevin Durant. And not only that, I mean, you got Caris LeVert, who played well in the bubble. You got Spencer Dinwiddie, who emerged for a good part of this past season. like, this Brooklyn team is going to be dangerous. I mean, they're young for the most part. They get out. They play hard. And also, let me say, Jacques Vaughn did an excellent job in the bubble. I mean, even though Brooklyn did get swept, they played pretty well for the most part, to me. I mean, they showed a lot of fight for the most part. And, you know, I think he is the guy going forward. But to me, like, in order for Brooklyn to actually, like, be a contender, it's all about how well Kevin Durant comes back next year, especially after that torn Achilles, which I do believe that he will come back 100%. But if Kevin Durant is coming back, like, kind of sluggish and can't really, like, you know, play the way that he was before the injury, then I don't see Brooklyn doing anything, because I personally don't see Kyrie as you know, being the leader of the team. It really revolves around KD for me. So that'll be an interesting thing to see next year. I'm fucking up my words. To see next year once everybody comes back.
Mm-hmm. And then I'll come back at you with that same question, Caleb. If KD and Kyrie come back healthy next year for Brooklyn, do you see them as being the favorites title contention in the East?
No, I actually don't.
Oh, come on, man.
Okay, let me hear it.
I think they have to get a solid coach first. If they have a solid coach, that's step one. Second, we got to see what they do in the offseason. And with the pieces that they have, the reason I'm not giving them that edge is because they don't have the chemistry. They've never played together. Kyrie and Durant have never played together. When you put talent like that and you add a new coach, it takes time for that to gel. And this is why I don't think they'll be a favorite. I think it'll be a team like maybe the Raptors next year again, maybe Milwaukee or maybe even Boston next year. I like to give teams that's been around for a minute, a chance, and the Nets, I think they're gonna have to. Next year is gonna be that year where they test their limits. They might make it out the East. They definitely have a high chance, a high ceiling. I'm not saying they don't, but they definitely have a high ceiling. I just can't give them the favorites if they haven't proved nothing. And you know, you're putting two big talents like that on one team with a new coach, and to me, they lack shooters. I don't know if Joe Harris is going to be there next year, but I think they need more shooters. I think they need to fill out the roster a little bit more. So, no, I don't have them as the favorites next year, but they do have a high ceiling, and they can very well make it out the East. If they did make it out the East next year, I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't really like that take, just because, like, they have new players. This whole Lakers team with LeBron and Anthony Davis were pretty much new. Didn't have any team chemistry.
Talking about different players, though. That's LeBron.
Yeah, but Kevin Durant is Kevin really Durant, almost man. On the same level as Kevin LeBron. Kevin Durant. He's Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant is not
a leader like LeBron.
And I mean, well, like, hey, I'm mad. Sorry to cut y'all, but you also got to remember.
Okay, let's hear it.
You also got to remember, look back at that Cleveland team back in, like, what was it, 14, 15, when LeBron decided to come back. That was pretty much a brand new team right there. They had a new coach, mm-hmm. David Blatt. Then they added, I mean, obviously they had Kyrie, but then they added guys like J.R. Smith, Ewan Shumpert,
Kevin Love.
Exactly. So, I mean, that was pretty much a whole new team there. And, I mean, and a lot of people always say, I mean, even though I disagree, a lot of people said that if Kevin Love and Kyrie were not injured for the finals, they probably would have won. So, you also have to look at that as well.
Yeah,
you know, that you have a point right there. You have a point. I can't shoot you down. I can't shoot you down. I just can't give it to KD, man. I can't. He has to show me more being a leader. You know, him going to –
He was a leader in OKC.
No, he – okay. And what happened in OKC? You're proving my point. What happened in OKC? He had to go to Golden State to get the ring. And was that his team in Golden State?
No, of course not. That was Steph Curry's team, without a doubt.
Facts.
That's all I'm saying. This is going to be his team. He's a winner now. He got to show me something. This is his tryout, you know, to me.
Okay. It's definitely an interesting take, but I could see how you go with that. I personally believe the Brooklyn Nets are going to be favorites next season. When you got Kevin Durant, who's supposed to be 100% healthy, with Kyrie Irving, It's going to be great. They're going to be one of the best duos in the NBA. Obviously, we look at top duos in the NBA. You got LeBron James and Anthony Davis. You got Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. You got Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. Then KD and Kyrie are going to be right there as a number four. And in the Eastern Conference, KD and Kyrie are pretty much the best duo in the Eastern Conference, in my opinion. Like, don't get me wrong, Giannis is good, but do you really trust Chris Middleton? No, I don't really buy Chris Middleton. I mean, the Milwaukee Bucks paid him a handsomely contract, and he really hasn't kind of played up to that contract. When you pay a guy, I believe it was like a 5-year, $180 million contract, you're supposed to get great value, like best at your position value, like Anthony Davis, like LeBron James, like Kevin Durant, not a guy who could be okay, you know. They're going to have to do good. You know, Milwaukee, all they pretty much have is just Giannis and everybody else. With Brooklyn, they're pretty much centered around KD and Kyrie with the rest of their team. Obviously, Caris LeVert's going to be great. Spencer Dinwiddie's going to be great. And I'm just going to be excited on what Brooklyn has to offer next season.
Yeah, most definitely. You can't go wrong with what they have to offer. I feel like, you know, they're going to shake something up this offseason. I really don't expect Caris LeVert back next year. I feel like they're going to shake something up. They're going to make a move this offseason. That's just what I feel from them. So, we'll see. We'll see.
All right. Well, we'll definitely see there. Let's move on to some teams that are up 3-1 and down 3-1. We look at – this is going to be a quick glimpses. The Lakers, they're up 3-1 over Portland. Obviously, the Lakers were surprised losing game one. A lot of the media hyped up the Trailblazers after winning that game one. Some people even said the Portland Trailblazers were the greatest 8th seed in NBA history. Obviously, looking back at it now, LeBron James just decided to kick it into gear, as well as Anthony Davis. And, you know, now they're up 3-1. Are any of you guys at all surprised that the Lakers are up 3-1, or did you guys pretty much expect it?
For me, I'm gonna say I'm a little surprised, but then again, I'm not. I honestly have this series going 6. You know what I'm saying? Just because I felt like, you know, the Lakers backcourt was not gonna like really stop Dame and CJ, but I'm gonna say over like the past like 3 games, ever since that game one disappointment, those guys have stepped up. Danny Green has really stepped up well. KCP has stepped up. Obviously, LeBron's playing LeBron. I still want a little more from AD. I'm not gonna lie. I know he's got the injured back right now, but hopefully that's not gonna hold him back. But I'm looking at this Laker team. I think that, you know, they've obviously kind of stepped it up after a slow start in the bubble. You know what I'm saying? I think they lost like the majority of their games throughout that 8-game stretch before the postseason started. So I personally think that they are on the right track. And like I said, I mean, I am a little surprised just because I thought Portland would put up a better fight. But I mean, then again, I mean, the greatness of LeBron always comes through.
And what about you, Caleb? Are you surprised at all that the Lakers are up 3-1, or is that kind of expected?
It was a little bit expected to me, to be honest. At first, I did have them going up to game 6, Lakers in 6, even Lakers in 7. I think I might have had it going to 7. I thought Dame would end up playing that whole series and just going all the way and just, you know, having the hot spark. They sat him down. They sat him down for game 5, so you know, it's pretty much over. So, yeah, I mean, like past episodes I said, being a Lakers fan, I wanted a challenge. And I believe with the Trailblazers, we got that. They gave it to us for, you know, game 2, game 1. Gave us a couple of challenges, got us back on track. So, yeah, it's over now, though. It's over. So, no surprise.
Oh, shit.
It's over. I knew we were going to win it.
I honestly forgot y'all were Laker fans. Oh, shit.
I'm gonna be honest. I was a surprise one bit. I had the Lakers winning in 5. I definitely felt that Damian Lillard was gonna at least take one game, and that one game was game 1. Now, the one time I would have been concerned is if the Lakers would have went down 0-2. If the Lakers would have lost game 2, I would have pressed the panic button immediately. But then once I kind of heard Charles Barkley say that the Trailblazers are going to sweep the Lakers, I knew we were in good hands because Charles Barkley predictions don't really turn out well. And really, ever since then, you know, they won three straight games. So, in my opinion, it'll be kind of what will the Lakers do next? Because obviously, you know, we look at the Lakers, they're the number one seed. The main thing that's expected of them is a championship. You know, it's one thing, yes, you know, you make it past the first round. Yippee, you made it past round one. Now can you make it past round two? Can you make it past Houston or OKC? And then if you make it to the conference finals, can you make it past a potential Dallas team, a potential Denver team, potential Utah, potential Clippers? Can you make it past those teams? Then if you make it to the NBA finals, can you make it past Milwaukee? Can you stop Giannis? Can you make it past Boston with all the shooters that they got? Can you make it past the defending champion Toronto Raptors? Even Miami Heat, if they make it far, can you make it past them? So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But I'm not surprised the Lakers are up 3-1. I did not expect them to sweep just because I knew Damian Lillard is a great player. Just a great player in general. And obviously, you know, him sitting out game five is pretty much going to be Lakers in five. If the Blazers do win game five, then I expect it to be in six. I don't expect the Blazers to come back from 3-1. You know, you got to give the Trailblazers credit. It was a great run what they had. Man. Fought hard to get the 8 seed. My opinion, Damian Lillard was a bubble MVP. Single-handedly carried that team to the 8 seed. Very impressed with what Damian Lillard did. And, you know, it's just on to the next season. I also kind of want to discuss a little bit of Milwaukee versus Orlando. Milwaukee obviously up 3-1. Orlando kind of doing the same thing they did last year. Last year they beat the Toronto Raptors in game one because Kyle Lowry dropped the goose egg, dropped 0 points. And then what happens? Kawhi Leonard goes off and the Raptors go on to win the next four straight games, go on to win the championship. I kind of feel like that's what's happening here in this series. We look at Giannis and the Bucks. They lost game one against Orlando. And a lot of people kind of expected that the Bucks would bounce back and win the next four. They've won three straight. They're up 3-1. I'm going to come back to the same question. Are any of you guys surprised at all that Milwaukee is up 3-1 over Orlando?
No, I expected that.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I didn't really think Orlando was really going to put up a good fight. Even though, in my opinion, they have pretty much fought throughout every game this year, every game of this series. But yeah. I just don't think they have enough. I mean, obviously, I mean, you're going up against the reigning MVP, and in my opinion, who's going to win it again this year? And, like, Milwaukee's firepower is just out of this world. You got Brook Lopez who can knock down shots from the perimeter, and then you got other guys who can knock down shots as well. But it's like Orlando, I mean, obviously, the loss of Jonathan Isaac really hurts. I can't remember if Aaron Gordon and Stephen came back in the series. Yeah, that's how, like, vaguely I've really watched the series. but yeah, I mean, honestly, no, I don't think anybody really expected Milwaukee to, like, actually lose to Orlando.
Yeah, I don't think anybody expected either. Let's move on to another team. The Utah Jazz, they were up 3-1 over Denver. Obviously, game five just happened today. Denver Nuggets get to live another day. Now they're only down 3-2. With the Utah Jazz being the sixth seed, I'm gonna go to you, Nick, on this one. How surprised are you that the Utah Jazz were up 3-1 in the series and now still up 3-2 over a third seed Denver Nuggets squad?
I'm honestly definitely surprised because I didn't expect Utah to actually put the Denver Nuggets on the ropes of, like, elimination. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I had the series going seven, and I honestly had Denver really taking control. But you got to give credit to Donovan Mitchell. That man's been playing out of this world. 2 50-point games a series. And also Mike Conley, who stepped up really well after coming back to the bubble. And also Rudy Gobert as well. So I think Utah is really clicking on all sides. Obviously, you know, they slipped up this past game. But I think now that I'm looking at it, I think they're going to close it in game six.
I'll come back with that same question to you, Caleb. How surprised are you that Utah is up 3-1, now 3-2 in this series?
Very surprised. I did not expect this from Utah. I gave a lot of fire to Denver coming out of the bubble, going into the playoffs, just because, you know, those seeding games, they were looking nice. I've seen some good glimpses from Bobo. I've seen some good glimpses from Michael Porter Jr. But no, I didn't expect Utah to do this. Donovan Mitchell turned himself into a superstar. Their team is just, I mean, looking great. Jordan Clarkson is looking like a Lou Williams part two. So I mean, they're just playing good basketball right now. I think Denver needs to get it together because they're a team that should be really competing. They have a solid team on paper, and they have a solid team when they play. They look like a really good team. They just need to play consistent games, complete them, and just you know stick to their guns. So I didn't expect this from Utah. I definitely was surprised, but I'm looking forward to Denver and seeing what they could do. I want Denver to come back and get this because I feel like they deserve it. They're a team that is ready to take that next step.
Do we expect? Yeah, sorry, not to cut you off. Do we expect another 40-some point game from Jamal Murray?
Oh, hey, of course. He raw, bro. He is raw. He is. He's raw. I didn't know. Yeah, I didn't know like that, but he's raw.
Yeah, he's definitely a great player. I'm surprised that Denver is down the series. This may surprise all you guys. I actually have the Denver Nuggets making it to the Western Conference Finals. I really believed in this Denver Nuggets team, and right now they're kind of disappointing me a little bit, you know. And it's obviously, you know, Nick, you made a really great point, and I also kind of said this when I was talking to Caleb earlier. It's been because of the emergence of Mike Conley. We look at when the Utah Jazz traded for Mike Conley before the season started, we really thought the Utah Jazz were going to take off because Mike Conley, when he was with Memphis, he was like a 20-point-per-game scorer, one of the better point guards in the league. And when he started in Utah, he was very slow. It was a slow start, and it looked like Conley was showing his age. And Utah struggled. And, you know, somehow they kept the fourth seed. Then the pandemic hit. They fell to number six, and that's when I was really like, you know what? They don't have Bojan Bogdanovic. They don't have Mike Conley. You know, it's going to be a struggle. And you know, ever since Mike Conley returns, and it's always with the player and having a child. We look at Fred VanVleet when his child was born. He just had a great postseason last year. I mean, he was hitting every shot known to man in the NBA Finals last year. Ever since he had a kid, kind of the same situation with Mike Conley. Ever since he had his kid, I believe it was either game three or game four, Conley was like a perfect 6-for-6 from three, really turning back the clock a little bit. And don't get me wrong, Donovan Mitchell has been great, but Mike Conley has been a real difference maker in this series. Why Utah is up. I mean, we expect great things from Donovan Mitchell, but I don't think we expected the kind of impact that Mike Conley just inserted in, you know, gave Utah really a juice in this series. And I really hope Denver comes back because if they don't, I feel like there are going to be some big changes, which moves on to my next question. I'm going to go to you on this one, Nick. If you are the Denver Nuggets, say you get eliminated by the Utah Jazz in six games, do you either trade for a big piece, or do you find a new head coach?
That's a tough one because I like what Mike Malone has done. I really do. I think he's done a fantastic job. I honestly don't think that they really need another. I just think that they need to stay healthy because you got to remember. I mean, even though Gary Harris has not played well this season, he's still a big piece. Same thing with Will Barton. Will Barton's not here as well. So these are two key pieces. And then, I mean, I do love the emergence of guys like Michael Porter Jr., Bobo, PJ Dozier, and all these other guys that are, you know, coming in and stepping up. But those are two guys, Gary Harris and Will Barton, that are really, really key pieces that they could really use. So I think possibly that's been affecting them. It's been made up somewhat from Jamal Murray just going off these past two games, but I'm just looking at Denver. I think when it comes to Utah, like Utah has all their players that, you know, they've been playing with over the past like few years. So, you know, they have everybody. So now it's like they're still, I guess you could say they're still trying to figure it out to me, like with emerging Michael Porter Jr. Who's been playing well. And all these other guys who are getting playing time because they've had so many people that were out. So it's been really difficult for Denver, to say the least, to some degree. But then again, I mean, you have the greatness of Jamal Murray and Jokic, who are so great that you would honestly think that, you know, they would really, like, use their power to, like, really beat the Utah Jazz. So for that question, I'm kind of neutral on it because I love Mike Malone. I love what he's done. And I personally think that the Denver Nuggets pretty much have everything that they have in order to, like, really, like, make some noise in the West. I just think that everybody needs to be together and, like, stay healthy.
Mm-hmm. Definitely made some good points there. I'm going to use that same question for you, Caleb. If you're the Denver Nuggets, you lose to the Utah Jazz in six games, what do you do? Do you think they should trade for a big piece, or do you think they should move on from their head coach?
That's a good question. You know, I really do like their head coach. I think he's a well-respected head coach. He's done a lot. He really, you know, transformed Bol Bol, Porter Jr., you know, Jokic. He's been there for a minute, so he grew with that team. And I don't think for them it's trading a coach. I don't think for them it's getting a bigger player or another player. I think, yeah, they can test the market and see what they can get. If they could somehow land, like, a Bradley Beal, why not? If they could somehow, you know, land, maybe take a chance on LaMelo Ball, or maybe land somebody else, see what they could, you know, do. Other than that, I say run it back, add some more pieces. They're already pretty deep. Their whole roster on paper is solid. Those guys could go to other teams and get minutes and be some good plug-in players. So I think for them, it's just adding on, maybe getting a couple pieces if they can, sneaking and getting a couple pieces and running it back and seeing what they could do. Going back to Utah, I really wanted to compliment them too, just because they don't have Bojan Bogdanovic. And I think if they had him as well, the series could have been over tonight, because that would make them a way deeper team. They're like a 7-deep team right now. With him, that would make them 8-deep with a threat from 3 points. So I definitely think that Utah is a great team right now. They definitely surprised me. Wanted to give them a shout out. But the Nuggets definitely, I think they should just run it back. I think they add more pieces and just run it back and see what they could do. Use that more as a measuring stick to, you know, determine a future.
Definitely good points there. I love Mike Malone. I feel like they would keep Malone. What I do think they would do, though, is I do think that they might trade for a big piece, but only if the price is right. You guys have made really good points. They have good young assets, but I feel like if the price is right, if they believe they can get like a superstar, like a Bradley Beal for the right amount, I'd say go for it. Like, if you could find a way to get Bradley Beal without having to trade Michael Porter Jr. or a Bol Bol type player, I'd say go in and go for it. Why not? You know, improve your chances in the West. But if you can't, keep the team the way it is. And I mean, we look at what's great about Denver is I feel like Denver is thinking ahead for the future. I mean, we look at teams in the Western Conference. We look at the Los Angeles Lakers. They're obviously really heavy on LeBron James and Anthony Davis. When LeBron James decides to retire, it's just going to be the Anthony Davis show. And, you know, we look at Denver. They got a lot of key pieces on that squad. We got the Clippers. They're pretty much invested in the next 2 years because Kawhi and Paul George are going to be under contract the next 2 years. So it'll be interesting what happens there. We look at Houston. They're pretty much reliant on Westbrook and Harden, depending on how far they go. And, you know, other than that, you know, Denver is one of those teams where in the next couple of years, you know, as teams start to get older in the Western Conference, they got some good youth. They got some good youth that they're a part of. And, you know, they're going to be a fun team to watch in the next couple of years. I definitely believe that Denver could potentially win a championship in the next 3 to 5 years. Do you guys agree with that take? Do you guys think that the Nuggets could win a title in the next 3 to 5 years?
I do. I do agree with that take. I
in the West? I'll let you go, Caleb. I'll let you go first. I'll let you go.
Okay. I do agree with that take. I think they can get one, man. I think that in the next 3 to 5 years, they could get one. Nikola is a great player. Like you said, they do have enough pieces for them to trade. and get a big piece. So, yeah, in the next 5 years, I do see him getting one more. Or not one more, but I see him getting one. If not getting really close.
All right. What about you, Nick?
Man, that's a tough one because obviously, well, how far in the future are we talking? Like 2-3 years, maybe?
Three to five years. Okay. Anywhere in a 3 to 5 year range.
Okay, because I was gonna say if it's in like the next like 2 or 3 years, I don't know, but maybe five. I'll give him a shot because I mean you're gonna have to look at it. Luka's gonna be a superstar by then, which is expected. And then you got Devin Booker out there in Phoenix, who is going to really emerge. Carl Anthony Towns and D'Lo in Minnesota, possibly if they do stay together within those 5 years. So, if the Nuggets do keep the main core of like Jokic, Murray, Garrett Harris, and all these other cats together within like that span of 5 years, and also make like probably like a little like small tweaks and adjustments, I think I'll give him a shot for sure. Because I mean, obviously you look at 5 years from now. I mean, a lot of these guys now, like the Clippers are going to be a little older, the Rockets are going to be a little older. So I think the sky would definitely be the limit for Denver. But it'll just be so tough because I think that the West is going to be tough for a long time just with all these young teams that are coming up. So it'll be interesting to see like what they do and how they use their experience around that time to really like hunt for a championship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I also agree. I believe the Denver Nuggets will win a championship in the next 3 to 5 years. Definitely not earlier, but I could see in like year 4, year 5, them potentially winning a championship just because the teams will get older and stuff. And let's move on to these next two series that have been really intriguing and no one really thought would be intriguing. Let's go to the big shocker here. The Los Angeles Clippers versus the Dallas Mavericks. This series is tied at 2 games apiece. Obviously, with Game 5 going on right now, the Clippers are just dominating the Mavericks in this Game 5. But throughout the first 4 games, nobody really expected that the Dallas Mavericks would be this close with the Clippers. A lot of people thought, you know, Clippers versus the Mavericks, you know, give Mavericks credit. You know, a lot of people thought, you know, it would be Clippers in 5. You know, a lot of people thought, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Paul George with the loaded bench unit, they're just going to steamroll over the Dallas Mavericks. But Luka Doncic and company are saying not so fast. I mean, we look at even in game one, Luka Doncic and company were dominating that game. And then the refs decided to give Porzingis 2 BS technical foul calls, throw him out the game, and it changed the entire game. I mean, we look at the Clippers would rally. They would win that game one. The Mavericks would come back, win game two. And this is when, you know, you get to see the memes of Pandemic P, you know, Push Off P. Paul George has not played up to his Playoff P name. Through games 2, 3, and 4, he has dropped 14 points, 11 points, and 9 points. And we look at Luka Doncic. He even hit a game winner in game 4. I'm going to go to you, Nick. How surprised are you in the Dallas Mavericks keeping up with the Los Angeles Clippers at a 2-2 series tie?
Not at all. You know why? Because I had the series going 7. I knew that the Clippers or the Mavericks were going to somehow keep this thing going just because I feel like the greatness of Luka and the emergence of Porzingis, and not only them, but the emergence of guys like a Seth Curry, Dorian Finney-Smith, Tim Hardaway, even Boban Marjanovic had some good stretches this series. So I knew. I mean, just looking at the Clippers this year, like I mean, they're obviously a great team, but they just I think that they're still trying to figure each other out just because I mean they've been injured all year long. You know, whether it's Kawhi sitting out for low management or PG dealing with the shoulder injury or Lou Williams being out, Trez being out. Like, the Clippers are still trying to work themselves together, even though, I mean, obviously it's going to come together as the playoffs go on, but I think the way that Dallas has really, like, given them problems, especially in the last game when they came back from 21 down. I mean, it just shows you how great Luka is, like, how great, like, he has the potential to be. So, Obviously, as far as I know, my predictions are going right. I got the Clippers winning the night, and then I got Dallas winning game six, and then I think the Clippers will probably close out in game seven. But I definitely knew that the Mavericks were going to give them problems.
What about you, Caleb? How surprised are you in the Dallas Mavericks being able to tie the series two games apiece with the Clippers?
Man, like everything Nick Andre said was perfect, bro. You're spot on, my guy. I mean, you know, the greatness of Luka has emerged. I really think next year he should be talked about as, you know, MVP candidate, one of the best players in the league, if not top three for sure. You know, Porzingis, it's unfortunate Porzingis had to miss as many games as he did this series. I feel like they could have been up 3-1 right now, but it's okay. I'm not worried. I do think that the Mavericks were going to give him a challenge. I expected that. So, hey, yeah, I mean, that's all I expected. I'm definitely not surprised.
I'm going to go a little different route. I was surprised. I had the Clippers winning in five, maybe six games. The reason why I'm surprised is I didn't expect Paul George to be this bad. Like, Paul George, the first four games of the series, has been flat out awful. What's even worse is Kawhi Leonard said before the season started why he wanted to go to the Clippers is so they can get Paul George. Because the thing was, Kawhi Leonard was pretty much going to go to the Lakers if the Clippers didn't get Paul George. And obviously, if you're the Clippers, you can't afford to be in the basement again for the next decade. So they had to give up a lot of draft capital, a lot of key pieces like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari to get Paul George. And obviously, they had a great season. But during the bubble and in the postseason, you know, Paul George has struggled. And, you know, hopefully he turns it around because, you know, if he doesn't turn it around, then there's going to be a lot of concern for Paul George moving forward. But I do believe the Clippers will get it done. I think it's a good run that the Mavericks had, but Mavericks are going to be a team to be reckoned with in the next couple of years.
Definitely. I think Luka's probably going to get at least five MVP awards. That's just me. I just think he's going to take over the league that much. And, I mean, also, I mean, you got to look at, like, I mean, the Mavericks have a team. And then also, I mean, Rick Carlisle, who's the championship coach as well. Like, you know, I think if they can really put those key pieces together going on, they can definitely, like, go for championship. I'm not going to say win one, but they could definitely make the finals one year and definitely push for a ring.
Yeah, they definitely could push for a ring. Obviously, we expect the Clippers to win this series, but I'm gonna go a different route with this next question. If the Clippers somehow get upset in the first round against the Dallas Mavericks, Nick Andre, if you're the GM of the Clippers and this scenario happens, if you get upset by the Mavericks in six or seven games, what do you do with the Clippers? Do you run back the same team? Do you fire maybe Doc Rivers, or do you trade, some players?
That's a tough one because, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I honestly don't see that happening at all. But if it were to happen, I think you got to go through it again. I mean, like I said, I mean this is year one. I mean they've had a good significant amount of injuries throughout the year with Kawhi load managing, PG being out for a good amount of time. I think Lou Williams was out for a good amount of time. And so, I mean, the Clippers are really still trying to, like, figure themselves out as a team. Even though they're a really great team, they're still trying to figure themselves out. And that's why, in my opinion, they're having problems now against the Mavericks. But like I said, if that were to happen, I don't see Doc Rivers getting fired. I think Doc Rivers is a great coach. I think that he can get this team to another level. Obviously, I mean, we saw with Boston, even though it's been about 12 years since he actually won a championship. But I think just give another year. I mean, this is year one, you know what I'm saying? I mean, even though they did have high expectations to win, I think next year they'll be hungrier than ever if they were to get bounced off this year in the first round.
Yeah, that's definitely – That's definitely weird as well. I feel what I believe is if and I'm going to give kind of my take on it. If the Clippers somehow lose in the first round, I feel like the Clippers have to get a good hard look at themselves in the mirror on can we win a championship next year? Because we look at the Clippers, I've stated it before earlier in this episode, and I'll state it again. The Clippers are bought in the next 2 years. If they don't win a championship in the next 2 years, I'm sorry, it's a failure. And if I'm Kawhi Leonard or Paul George, I get out of the Clippers because it's like if I can't win a championship in the next 2 years, then how am I going to win one then? Because you got to look at in the next 2 years, the Dallas Mavericks are going to be up and coming. The Golden State Warriors are going to be back.
Facts.
Lakers are still going to be competing with LeBron and Anthony Davis. And did I already state Denver? Even Denver's going to be up there, and that's just saying.
Not to mention New Orleans, Memphis, especially Memphis to me, which would be crazy.
Yeah, it definitely is going to be crazy. I'm trying to get Caleb back on for some reason. It kicked him out. So while we wait for him to come back on, we're gonna move on to the next series that is tied at 2 games apiece. And this has been really an interesting series. We look at the Houston Rockets and the Oklahoma City Thunder. We look at the Houston Rockets. They were up 2-0 without Russell Westbrook. It looked like they were controlling the series all the way through and through. They were just straight up dominating the series without Russell Westbrook. And now it kind of seems like the Oklahoma City Thunder are kind of figuring it out. You know, now we look at Chris Paul and company. They just found a way to come back and tie the series at two games apiece. I'm going to go to you, Nick. How surprised are you that the Oklahoma City Thunder has come back and won it and tied the series at 2 games apiece?
I'm surprised, but then again, I'm not. I'm not going to lie. Like, before the series started, when I found out that Russell Westbrook was not going to play, I actually had OKC initially, like, kind of taking control of the series, not because of, like, you know, I'm not trying to, like, disregard the greatness of Houston, but I think that Westbrook was, like, such a big piece that, you know, I feel like his presence would be missed. But obviously that hasn't shown at all. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Mike D'Antoni is really, really convincing me that this small ball thing is working because it really is. Like, Houston is just, like, it's really been a three-point shooting to me for Houston. Like, they're letting that thing fly and they're knocking it down. That's what's really killing them. And I mean, not to mention, I mean, I think that they're, I feel like they're really getting into the Thunder as well defensively as well. Like, I mean, I like what PJ Tucker has done. I like what, you know, Robert Covington has done, Jeff Green, like all the key pieces for Houston who play around that front court area have really, like, done a really good job for them. And I'm going to say, I think Chris Paul is really getting this OKC team together. I mean, more as the series goes on. I mean, they had a pretty solid game 4, to say the least. Even though they nearly blew that one, but I mean they still ended up coming together. So I feel like whoever takes game 5, the series is going to go to them.
Yeah, most definitely. And Caleb isn't able to come back in the rest of the episode, so we like to thank Caleb for giving the amount of input that he did throughout this episode. We appreciate that. And anyways, I like what you said, Nick, about the Houston Rockets. I truly believe, and you made a good point there. Whoever wins this game 5, I believe it's tomorrow. Whoever wins game 5, I feel like he's going to win the series. I truly believe that. I feel like Russell Westbrook has to come back and play now. I mean, when the Houston Rockets were up 2-0, I felt like, you know what, they could go this series without Russell Westbrook, but they're going to need him back in round 2. But the way how this series has changed, they got to get him back for game 5. And for the Houston Rockets, it is a must-win for them. If they don't win, they don't win this game, then there could be some big changes coming up to the team in the near future.
Yeah, and I definitely agree. I think this is a must win game. Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I'm really shocked with the way that Houston has played without Westbrook, because I thought that he was gonna be a really big miss for them, especially like being out throughout the series. But I mean, they've really shown a lot of like resilience throughout this series, to say the least. I mean, obviously James Harden playing well, and also like the other guys that I named earlier. But I think it's a combination of like Houston like really having been in these type of situations, and OKC still relatively young, still trying to figure it out. So I feel like, you know, that's what really been like the advantage for Houston, is just, you know, them having the experience and obviously being in these situations on numerous occasions.
Most definitely. This is going to be one of the closing questions for this episode that I have, and it's a great honor to ask you this question. If the Houston Rockets lose this series against the Oklahoma City Thunder up 2-0, and they lose this series, do the Houston Rockets fire Mike D'Antoni?
Yes. Yes. And I've said this on my podcast. I've said this on numerous occasions. Yes. Only reason why is because, I mean, it's been, what, about 3-4 years now? And it just seems like, you know, they just can't get over that hump. You know what I'm saying? They grab Chris Paul. You would think them having Chris Paul would possibly get them over the hump, but obviously, I mean, they face a great Golden State team, and then
it would have if Chris Paul didn't get hurt in 2018.
But then not only that, the next year they play Golden State again, and then they lose Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. They lost Kevin Durant in the third quarter of Game 5, and that's the point there where, you know, you got to put your foot on the gas pedal, because obviously around that time Steph and Clay weren't even playing well. So it was really up to James Harden and Chris Paul to really close that series out themselves. And then all of a sudden, you know, they lose Game 5, and then Steph Curry has a great second half in Game 6, and then boom, it's over. Now you have Russell Westbrook, who has shown a lot of resiliency. But then the scratching point for me that made me scratch my head was them trading Clint Capella, who was like one of the best rim protectors in the NBA. Yeah, I didn't really understand it when it first happened. I was honestly pissed off when it happened. I didn't understand the direction that they were going. Obviously, it's showing that it's working now, but I've said this about Houston for years now. Is live or die by the three. If they're not making shots, they're not winning. You know what I'm saying? Like, it really relies on their offense and them knocking down shots. They take over like 53s a game. So if they're not making at least like 34-35% of those shots, they're going to lose at most times.
Yeah, and we even saw it in Game 4. Houston in the second half, they start on fire. They go 8-for-8 from three, and then the rest of the game, they finish 5-26.
Exactly.
So it's one of those where they live and die by the three. If it goes in, great. If it doesn't, then they're going to lose. And since you're a special guest, I know we were in a sportscaster stream before when we did the NBA Unwrapped. I know you are a big Warriors fan. The draft lottery went on. Your Golden State Warriors got the second overall pick. Do you believe the Golden State Warriors are going to use that second overall pick for a trade asset, or do you believe they'll draft a young player?
I feel like there might be a chance they do, but in my opinion, man, just go for it. I mean, I personally think that if they do choose wisely with that second overall pick, I think James Wiseman is the guy for this team, especially, you know, just a young big man who has a lot of potential, has a lot of talent. I think that he could fit well in this Golden State offense. I mean, this Golden State offense is like so unselfish, you know, as great as Steph and Clay are, they move the ball like crazy. They get the open guys. I think James Wiseman under Steve Kerr could be a great fitting. Even going forward, like, you know, once Steph and Clay are, you know, pretty much done. I mean, the Warriors have a bright future. I mean, Eric Paschal played well before the season was suspended. I think Golden State can really do something if they draft Wiseman.
Yeah, I truly believe that as well. I truly believe that they're going to draft James Wiseman. A lot of people say, oh, they're gonna trade that number 2 overall pick to get a veteran or to pair up another star with Steph, Clay, and Draymond. I'm just like, why don't you just get the best center in the draft and set yourself up for for just a couple more years to come. James Wiseman, I feel like, is going to be the best selection for them.
A part of me understands that, because the Warriors, after winning so many championships over the past years, like they're still in win now mode. And I mean, they're not getting any younger. Like Steph Curry's like, what, 32, 33? I think Klay's in his 30s. Mm-hmm. Draymond is in his 30s. So they're pretty much a win now mode, especially in a tough Western Conference. So they want to – I can understand, like, if they want to trade that pick and grab somebody who can really, like, help them go after that next championship that they want. So – but then again, I mean, like, also, if I am Steve Kerr and the Warriors, like, you know, you also want to build for the future as well. I think James Wiseman is – the best big man in this draft, and I think just building around him for the future, I think that could possibly lead to more championships then going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I truly believe that as well. And that, my friends, will conclude episode 17 of the MCS Real Sports Podcast. Nick, Andre, I want to thank you for being able to join in this episode. It's a great honor to have you on. And I'm definitely going to be checking out your podcast, Above the Rim. And for you guys that are watching this episode, whether you're on Anchor or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, make sure you check out Above the Rim. It's a podcast that Nick Andre is doing. It's a great, great stuff about basketball. If you're a big basketball fan, definitely check him out. Once again, Nick Andre, I want to thank you for joining in this episode. Do you got any last words?
Follow me on Twitter @_NickDormus. I'll spell that out, _NickDormus. Make sure to follow my guy Bo on Twitter @BoAllen22. Make sure to follow us on Twitter @AboveTheRim19. We give out good basketball content all throughout the day, or good basketball content all throughout. So make sure to check us out.
Yeah, most definitely. Thank you, Nick Andre, for joining this episode. Definitely. Make sure you come by in any future episodes. We talk about basketball. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir.